This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We'll begin our hour of radio drama with the adventures of Rocky Jordan. We'll hear The Race, his story from July 17, 1949. After that, it's Cavalcade of America and Valley Forge, their episode from January 5th, 1942.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Café Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, The Race.
I was sitting in my office at the Tambourine, trying to beat the terrific afternoon heat. Like everyone else in the cafe, I was too shot to even raise a finger. Then in came this girl. She startled me a little, because she darted in and out of the tables in high gear, like she was searching for someone. When she began yakking at Chris, my bartender, my curiosity got the best of me. Someone jumping up and down in this heat deserved attention. As I walked over, I noticed she was nice-looking in a quiet sort of way. In spite of the fact, she looked as if any moment she might spring right through the ceiling.
But he has been here, hasn't he?
I haven't seen him all day.
What's up, Chris?
Oh, Rocky.
I've got to find Abdullah, Ben Abdullah. They said he was up here at the Tambourine.
You know, Ben Abdullah. He owns that little pawn shop up on the corner.
Yeah, sure, I know.
It's very important. There isn't time to explain. Just tell me where I can find him, please. Every second counts.
Well, I haven't seen him all day.
I tried to tell her.
Do you know where he is, then?
He could be one of a thousand places.
Why don't you try the pawn
He's
shop?
He's got a sign hanging on the door, out to lunch. A water vendor at the corner said he'd be up here. It's desperate, don't you see?
No, I don't.
If I don't get into that store in the next few minutes, there isn't going to be anything left of this whole block.
Maybe the heat's got her, Rocky.
It's too late to look for him. If I could just get into his shop.
Hey, take it easy, lady. Oh, that won't get a thing accomplished. Now, come on, tell me what it's all about.
I'm afraid it's even too late now to break into his shop. I wouldn't even know where to look for it.
Look for what?
A high-powered explosive.
A what?
A bomb. It's in the pawn shop.
Bomb?
She's nuts.
Maybe you'd better start from the beginning.
There's not time to explain. It will be going off in a few minutes. What we better do is clear the entire area before everyone is killed.
Sunstroke, if you ask me.
Chris, I don't know whether she's loony or...
Don't stand there! Tell everyone to clear the streets! They listen to you, not me!
Look, lady, I don't like to have my leg pulled.
Every second counts. Now, please, believe me. Anyone within 100 yards of the pawn shop is in danger.
Okay, okay. Chris, we better play it safe. Call the fire department, the police, and what have you. There's a bomb going off. I think. Well, maybe Chris was right. Maybe the dame had got too much sun and blown her top. But who could take chances on a bomb going off? I dashed down the street like a poor man's Mel Patton, and in what must have been the world's record, the block was completely empty. The girl attacked right along with me, and once the block was cleared, we made a run for the safety zone where the crowd had formed 100 yards away. When we were about 60 yards from it, the girl began to tug at my arm and scream wildly at me.
Don't! Don't! It's too late to run any further!
Quiet!
Don't! Fall on your face, quick!
I'd fallen flat on my face and curled up like a clam. Outside of my eardrums almost breaking and a torn pair of pants, I was in pretty fair shape. After the thunder stopped, I looked back down the street. There was a black hole that was once Ben Abdullah's pawn shop. None of the shops on the block got off easy. As for the tambourine, there wasn't a window left in it. I turned to congratulate the girl on her king-size bomb, but she was nowhere in sight. It was the sweetest job of vanishing into thin air I'd seen in some time. I started to get to my feet when I noticed that where the girl had been lying was a crumpled pawn ticket. As I picked it up, a pair of familiar feet stopped in front of me. I looked up in the face of Captain Sam Sabaya of the Cairo Police Force and his erstwhile shadow, Greco. Hi, Sam.
Your bartender called us.
Give me a hand up. Thanks. Well, Sam, just goes to show you. Never underrate a woman.
Your bartender explained the entire proceedings. Where is she?
Looks like she took a powder.
You mean...
I do.
If I may say so, my captain, it sounds too rehearsed.
Good old Greco. I hate to disappoint you, but I never saw the girl before in my life.
Jordan, did she give you any hint as to what was behind the explosion?
Nothing. This pawn ticket might help. I'm sure it was hers. She must have dropped it when she fell to the ground.
I will take it. Thank you, Jordan.
Should have her name and address on it.
It has a name and address, all right. Only it's a man's name. Rollo Bendata.
Well, that's one on me.
Rocky, you're wanted on the telephone.
Oh, all right, Chris. I'll be right there.
I want to ask you some more questions, Rocky.
Check with me in the tambourine, Sam. You won't have any trouble finding it. It's the only building in the block in one piece. I hurried back to my office and picked up the phone. From the other end of the wire came the voice of my late friend, the young lady whose specialty seemed to be high-powered explosives.
Mr. Jordan, I'm sorry I had to run out on you.
Well, so am I.
You must understand, I couldn't face the police.
Where are you now?
I won't waste words. I'm in terrible trouble. I need your help. I'll pay anything for it.
Well, you can pay for the broken windows and the tambourine.
Anything. Will you help me?
I'm afraid tossing bombs is a little out of my line.
Believe me, I'm not asking for myself. It's for hundreds of innocent people who may be harmed.
I could back that line with hearts and flowers.
Mr. Jordan, if I weren't on the level, would I have warned you about the explosive in the pawn shop?
All right. You tell me, and I'll listen.
I can't over the telephone. I'll give you an address where you can meet me.
Okay. But look, lady, I'm leaving word with my bartender where I'm going, just in case you got more bombs up your sleeve. She gave me an address that was on the edge of Cairo. As I hung up, I saw Sabaya and Greco coming in the front door, so I took off the back way. I took a taxi, and we drove for an hour. The address turned out to be a small house set 1 mile out in the desert. I paid off the hack, went up and knocked on the door.
Are you alone?
Yeah. You couldn't have picked a closer place.
I'm sorry, but I live here. Come in.
Huh? Looks more like a laboratory to me.
It is. I'm an explosives chemist. I live in the back.
Dangerous address.
I'd better introduce myself. I'm Suzanne Durand. Won't you sit down?
No, thanks. Not on a keg of dynamite. And stop jumping up and down.
I can't help it. We only have 11 hours left.
Hey, look, I've had enough riddles for one day. What's this all about?
I'll start from the beginning.
But it would help.
A man by the name of Negri Seer hired me to develop a time bomb that would have a 24-hour action delay.
Why?
He heads a combine that wants to blast for water in the desert.
What?
You can imagine what it would mean if you could bring an incessant water supply to Cairo.
Well, sure, but why not a regular time bomb or dynamite?
He wanted an explosive that would need no wiring so that his company wouldn't attract attention.
Why all the secrecy?
Why, it's like digging for gold. He thinks he's found a spot where there might be water, and he doesn't want anyone to know till he's staked his claim.
I think he's crazy. Where does the pawn shop come in?
I made two bombs, which I was going to test today. I was afraid my servant might accidentally spoil them, so I hid them in the base of an old clock. I went shopping, and when I came back, the clock was gone. The servant must have needed money, so he stole the clock, never realizing the bombs were in there, and pawned it.
Is your servant's name Rollo Bendata?
Yes. How did you know?
You left his pawn ticket in the street. It looks to me like Rollo's in trouble, not you.
Only one of the bombs went off in the pawn shop. Oh, don't you see? The other one will go off.
You mean we're going to have to go through that all again?
The bombs were set to go off at different times.
Yeah, but the blast of one could have exploded the second one.
Yes, but you only heard one explosion, didn't you? Only one exploded, Mr. Jordan. I could tell by the force.
Well, maybe Rollo's got the other bomb.
I've already talked to him. He swears he knows nothing about them.
Oh, fine.
I don't know where to look for it, and according to my calculations, the bomb should go off in 10 hours and 46 minutes.
Well, what's this bomb look like?
A small object made of lead with a screw arrangement. When it's screwed down, the process begins. Two liquids, one eats through the separation, and...
Oh, I get it.
Hundreds of people will be killed.
Look, if you want me to help, you got to promise me one thing.
Name it.
Stop jumping up and down.
I promise.
This guy, Negri Sear, you mentioned. You know where he lives?
Yes.
Come on, let's pay him a visit.
I'll call a taxi.
You're bouncing up and down again.
I'm sorry.
Now relax, will you? We've still got 10 hours and 46 minutes.
10 hours and 44 minutes.
We taxied across town to Negri Sear's apartment house. Negri let us in. He was the oddest little guy I'd ever laid eyes on. Short and skinny, but he had a huge head that should have gone with the body of a giant. He looked so top-heavy, I had to control myself from wanting to hold him up so he wouldn't topple over. His apartment was cluttered with bric-a-brac and large packing cases. The latter, I gathered, must have had something to do with his water project. When Suzanne told him about the bomb, he got quite irked, to say the least.
Really, my dear, I don't know what you expect me to do if you've lost one of your ghastly bombs.
Well, coming here was my idea.
And just who are you, Jordan? Suzanne, who is this man?
He's trying to help me.
You didn't tell him, I hope.
I'm afraid I had to.
You were sworn to secrecy. How could you? Well, Jordan, you'll never find out where I hope to get water.
I'm not interested in your plan for digging water. I'm only trying to locate the bomb.
Oh, this is dreadful. It will be all over Cairo. Everyone will be digging for water.
No one outside of this room will know. Besides, you're the only one who knows the locale where the water might be.
Huh? So you're going to blackmail me, huh? Or maybe you're going to torture me till I tell you the exact spot.
Look, for the last time...
What will my partners think? I will tell you nothing.
Lucky, we can't afford to waste all this time.
Look, Negri, if you'll just answer a few questions.
Never.
Were you out at Suzanne's place this afternoon?
Yes, but she wasn't home, so I left.
I was probably tracking down Rollo.
What time were you out there?
Our appointment was for 2. I'm always on time.
Did you see anyone or notice anything that might help us?
No, no, no. Is that clear?
Very.
There are only 8 hours left, Rocky. What are we going to do?
All right, hang on to yourself.
Suzanne, I want you to take this man out of here right away, or I'll call the police.
We're going.
So help me, I warn you. You'll never find out where I'm going to get water. Never.
What I'm wondering is if we'll ever find out where to find that other bomb. Ever.
You are listening to The Race, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. May we suggest that you vary your CBS listening. Education is one of the most important phases of life today. Starting Monday, tomorrow night, Harvard University's President James Bryant Conant will discuss America's free public school system in a series of 5 talks each evening next week. As a thinking citizen, you'll find this series informative and important. So find out when the CBS program You and Education will be heard over your local CBS station and tune in. We think it will be well worth your while. Now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan, The Race.
It all began when a dame chemist named Suzanne Duran mixed up a couple of bombs for a character called Negri Sear, who had himself a great scheme. He was going to blast for water in the Sahara and make Egypt a garden spot. That sounded sort of screwy, but the noise of one of those bombs exploding sounded anything but. Well, that took care of one, but there was still another bomb someplace in the Near East, and Suzanne figured it'd go off in 8 hours. Where was it? Hey, you tell me. Negri Sear couldn't. We asked him. Well, when we came out on the street, Suzanne was hopping up and down again and on the verge of tears. And she looked at me as though I could supply all the answers.
Mr. Jordan, there must be something we can do.
Do you know where the office of the Cairo Mail is?
Yes.
Good. Now listen, and stop jiggling.
We have a plan, then?
Maybe. We're going to have to split up to save time.
All right.
I'll get out of the newspaper office and ask for Ed Stack. He's a friend of mine. Give him a description of the bomb.
What else?
That's all. You'll get out an extra and see that it's broadcast, too. That way, everyone will be warned and on the lookout.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And when you finish there, go to the tambourine and wait for me.
Where are you going?
Where can I find Rollo?
Native quarters, number 6, Ocar Street.
I'll check.
Rocky, I
don't... Look, will you stop worrying? It's going to be okay. Take my word for it. Yeah, it was going to be okay, sure. Only I wish I could have believed it. I was stymied from ear to ear. I put Suzanne in a taxi, and she was whisked off toward the newspaper office. I wanted to cross the street to get a taxi myself when up roared Sam Sabaya, taking the corner on two wheels.
Jordan!
Well, this is a coincidence, Sam.
I traced you through this taxi company. Where's the girl?
On her way to the newspaper office.
Rocky, I'm losing my patience. You said you did not know the girl. When I finally traced her, I learned she has been with you.
Sam, hang on to your brass badge. Got something to tell you.
Well, Jordan, I'm waiting.
She's working for a character named Negri Seer.
Negri Seer? Hmm. Yes, I've heard something of him. He's a dealer in fine art, a collector and such.
Fine art, eh? Well, he's got a sideline.
What do you mean?
The girl's a chemist. He hired her to make a couple of tickless bombs to blast for water in the Sahara.
Jordan, are you serious?
So help me, Sam. That's a story I got.
Blast for water in the Sahara?
Shh. It's a secret.
Jordan, this is not an amusing matter. Water in this part of the world is nothing to laugh at. There are those in these desert lands who make of it a religion. Yet is it possible to blast for water in the Sahara?
Negri Seer thinks so. Or so he says.
What could be done to all this arid land? Jordan, is this a trick?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Then I am inclined to think it is.
Well, the bomb was real enough.
Yes, yes, of course. We must make every effort to locate the other... But still...
Yes, eh?
Jordan, if that girl is not at the newspaper office as you say, I'm going to hold you responsible for aiding her escape.
Sam took off, and I checked the time and shuddered. Then I headed for the home of Rollo Bendata, Suzanne's servant, for my talk with him. I knocked hopefully on his door. No one answered, so I tried the door. It was open. The room was kind of dark. I took a few steps and stumbled. I didn't have to look twice to know I'd stumbled over a body. And the body was real dead. That's when a door slammed behind me. I wheeled around and right into a native holding a gun.
Your hands in the air, Fender.
Hey, what is this?
You'll kill my brother Rollo, yes?
Rollo?
Why you kill him?
You're making a mistake, buddy.
No, no, you kill him, you despised Westerner. I told Rollo to keep away from
Stop
you.
Waving that gun around.
First working for the despised Effendi with a big head. Now this, I kill you to avenge his death.
I dove on him as he fired. The shots went wild. We rolled around for a while, fighting for the gun. Then I pulled away and caught him with a hard right. He dropped to the floor. Well, there was no sense in hanging around with one of my hosts in the refrigerator and the other in the deep freeze. So Rollo was really working for Negri Seer. I raced up the street till I came to a public telephone and called the tambourine. I wanted to tell Suzanne what I found out about her servant. Chris, this is Rocky.
Boy, I'm glad you called. Sabaya just left.
Oh, what's up?
He missed the girl again, and he thinks you gave him the business.
Well, that's why I'm calling. Where is she?
She was only here a minute, then left with some guy.
Who?
I don't know. He was a little guy with the biggest head.
Negri Seer.
What's going on, Rock?
It beats me. But there's a noise that's going to rock Cairo in a couple of hours, and I got a feeling Sabaya's going to be looking at me. Well, there were a lot of lies in it someplace. I raced for Negri's apartment, but the place was deserted. Negri was gone. Suzanne wasn't there, but neither were the packing cases that belonged to Negri Sear. That took me to the railroad station double time. I pushed through the crowd till I came to the gates for departing trains. Waiting in one of the lines was Negri Sear.
Jordan, what are you doing here?
Looking for you. You better step out of line.
Do not be too hasty, Jordan.
Come on, out of the line before I drag you.
Dear fellow, let us talk this over where no one may overhear us.
All right. All right, over into this corner.
There. Now,
you listen. I'm going to do the talking.
But, my dear fellow, I'll
show
you...
Where's Suzanne?
But how should I know? I know. You're still trying to trick me into revealing secrets.
Close
that
it.
Will...
Rollo Vendetta, Suzanne's servant, was working for you. That means he took those bombs from Suzanne's place purposely, on your orders. That means also he hocked one bomb, the one on the clock, at that pawn shop on your orders, too.
Lies! Lies! Deceitful man!
All right. One bomb hocked, one bomb still on the loose. All on purpose, too, Negri. You figured if one went off, Suzanne would think both of them went off. Meanwhile, you'd have one to toy with.
Go ahead, persecute me. Persecute me if you wish.
Ah, come off it.
So what if I say you are right? What then?
So the bomb's going to explode in an hour and a half. I'll make your head ring until you tell me where it is.
That would never succeed. I will never tell you. I will never tell you where the bomb is or why I have placed it there.
That water blasting's a phony deal.
Indeed?
I bet your packing cases will give me some answer.
I am the only one who knows the whereabouts of the bomb, and I will not tell. I will not tell unless...
What's the deal?
Allow me to leave Cairo. Allow me to leave Cairo, and I shall reveal the...
Either one of you.
Well, Greco.
Jordan, you have trapped me. You have deliberately led the police to me.
Come, the both of you, to police headquarters.
Put away that gun, Greco. You're attracting attention.
Come, I say.
No, you will not capture me. You will not take me, indeed.
Don't shoot, Greco. Don't shoot him. He's the only one.
No!
Oh.
Come on, Lambo.
I told you, you will not take me, indeed.
Hey, you did it upright, Greco. He's dead.
I had no choice. He reached for a gun. Everybody, stand back!
You'll probably get a promotion for this.
It was me or he. I had no choice. Attention, everyone! Stand back! Now, Jordan. Jordan! Jordan! Where are you?
I dove into the crowd and got lost. Well, I was free of Greco, but I was right back where I started. I checked the time again. In an hour and 10 minutes, that bomb would go off. And the only man who knew where it was dead. Well, I mulled the whole thing over for a while. All that was left were those packing cases of Negri's. It took me 10 minutes to find them. They were being loaded into a baggage car at the end of the line. I hurried up to one of the native porters and tried to con him. Oh, look, I want to check my baggage to see if I forgot anything.
Yes, Effendi. Which are yours?
Yeah, those packing cases over there.
Yes, Effendi. Your luggage checks?
Luggage checks?
I cannot let you look into the cases without them.
I left them with my wife.
Oh, sorry, Effendi, but I cannot do it. It is against the regulations, and I cannot...
I didn't want to hit him, but who had time to argue or explain? I began ripping into the packing cases marked fragile. The first case had some figures carved in marble and some pictures, but they didn't ring any bells. It wasn't until I got inside the second case that I saw the light. It contained a green jade vase that I knew I'd seen before. And right then and there, Negri's whole deal became clear. I knew where the bomb was and why. I scrambled out to the street. When I looked at my watch, I broke out in a cold sweat. It was less than an hour, 50 minutes to be exact. I dashed up to a taxi and shook the sleeping driver. Wake up, will you? Come on. Palace of Fine Arts. Come on, let's go. Look, money. Maybe this will wake you up.
The night is so hot, Effendi, for such energy.
It is dough. All of it's yours, you understand? Only you got to step on it.
I will try. Will do.
The Palace of Fine Arts.
It is closed at this hour.
I know it's closed. Let me worry about that.
Yes, Effendi. Get in. It is too hot to worry.
The
Can't you go any faster than this?
In this weather, the motor gets hot.
Well, excuse me. I didn't mean to keep you awake. Now, between yawns, we lumbered along, and it was 20 minutes later before we pulled up in front of the Palace of Fine Arts. I threw the money at the driver, raced up the tier of steps that led to the entrance. The joint was dark, but I saw a woman waiting in the shadows of the doorway. Suzanne!
Lockie, is that you?
Yes.
I was beginning to get worried. Negri said you had located the bomb and instructed me to meet you here.
Well, double talk. Now, don't start jumping. The bomb is in this building.
But Negri said
Never mind, Negri. I'll explain later. We've only got a few minutes.
This building covers a square block.
There must be a guard around.
Inside.
Look, start screaming. I'll bang on the door. All right, that's enough. Here he comes. I said that's enough. Stop it. Sorry, I had to hit you.
It's all right, my nerves. I couldn't stop.
Oh, here's the guard. Oh, open up. We got to get inside. There's a bomb in there.
Go away. We are closed.
Open up. There's a bomb in there.
It is after hours. Can you not breathe?
He can't hear you.
I stand back. I'm going to smash the glass with my foot. Yeah.
He's got a gun.
You are under arrest.
For the last time, there's a bomb in here.
What are you saying?
Someone has planted a bomb here.
It's going to go off in about 11 minutes.
You mean the bomb they have been talking about over the radio?
Yes.
Oh. Come in.
Now that we're in, Rocky, what are we going to do?
Come on, follow me. Look out.
There's a million places to look.
All right, here. Here's a jade room. Come on. Yeah, over there, that green jade vase. It's the same as the one Negri had in the packing case. Yeah, wait a minute. I'll push down into it. There. Well, here's your bomb.
That's it.
All right, do something to it, Suzanne.
Loosen the screw, then pour off the top liquid. Won't go off now.
Oh, where's the guard?
Back there. He fainted. I guess he couldn't take it.
Suzanne, this is no time to leave me standing here alone. Well, that was about it. Negri had himself a fine little deal. The water blasting, of course, was phony. That was just his way of getting Suzanne to make a couple of bombs, tickless ones. The first explosion was to make it seem as though both bombs went off. But the live one that Negri kept, he planted in the Palace of Fine Arts to cover up his robbery. Negri was to walk off with a lot of priceless art objects, leave some phonies in its stead, then blow up part of the building so that no one would ever know the real art object had been taken. And the tickless bomb was necessary so that it wouldn't attract attention, sitting there real quietly in the green jade vase. Yeah, art can be a pretty interesting subject, I guess. I'll never forget the life class I once took when I was a kid. Funny thing about it, though, it was a pretty fascinating class, but somehow I can't remember that I ever had any time in it for painting.
It's CBS again at this same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Just another reminder to all our CBS listeners, You and Education, a series of five talks, begins Monday and will be heard each night next week on your local Columbia station. Consult your newspaper for the broadcast time. You and Education brings you the views of a distinguished American, James Bryant Conant, president of Harvard University, in a discussion of the free public school system. Be sure to listen to CBS for You and Education. Rocky Jordan, starring Jack Moyles in the title role, is produced by Cliff Howell and directed tonight by Gordon T. Hughes. Original music was by Richard Arant and conducted by Ivan Dittmars. Tonight's story by Bernard Girard was edited by Gomer Kuhl and Larry Roman. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Starring Lionel Barrymore in Valley Forge, Maxwell Anderson's great play on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Cavalcade of America takes unusual pride in being able to present for its first program in the year 1942 a new radio adaptation based on Maxwell Anderson's prize-winning epic drama, Valley Forge. Standing at the threshold of a dark year in our history, it is fitting for us to salute the spirit in which this work has been undertaken. For at no other time has the moving story of Washington at Valley Forge been more apt for men of another generation. His are words speaking to us out of the past. They come as a legacy for us today. And so it is that DuPont proudly presents Valley Forge, starring Lionel Barrymore.
Gentlemen, attention. Commanding Officer General Washington.
At ease, gentlemen. You'll forgive this delay. Now, if you'll read the minutes, Mr. Tench.
Yes, sir. These sentences are to stand. Joseph Cutler for repeated desertions to be cashiered with infamy. Samuel Jelliffe, who was sentenced to be hanged for espionage, to be reprieved and returned to the officer's prison in consideration of having made a full and free confession.
Is that all?
That's all, General. Unless you have a minute to squander on that whey-faced boy you saw in the entrance.
Who is he?
Hanged if I know his name. I've booted him some five or six times, but he's back again today asking to see you.
Well, let him come in.
As you say, sir. Come along, man. The General will see you.
Thank you, sir.
Spit it out and be terse about it. We've no time for a history.
Why are you here, lad?
Why, I'll say it as brief as I can, sir. I joined the Army for 3 years, and my time's nearly up. And, well, the truth is, I'm dying. They tell me it's ague, something wrong with my stomach.
Colonel Tench will arrange to send you home at once.
Oh, I thank you, sir, but that's not what I wanted.
I'm afraid that's all we have to offer.
It's hard to say what it is I wanted. I don't want to die. Nobody wants to die young. But I will, whether I go or stay here. And, well, damn it, let me die for something. I've believed in this war we're fighting, and you, sir, I've believed in you.
I very much fear you're not fit for service. I'm sorry.
You better come along out of here, lad. I'm sorry, General Washington, if I'd had any idea what...
Yes, death's a long way from you. How could you have any idea? But let me be on a field with a gun in my hand to die there. Not die wretching my lungs and brains out here in this rat trap of an encampment.
Come, there's no time for this, man. You're in a fever.
One moment, Colonel Tench. Let him stay.
Thank you, sir. Won't you try to see it, sir? A lot of men have died. I'm only one. But we're dead a long time for want of freedom. We came to fight for something. We believed in what...
Don't worry, lad. We'll do what we can. You'll be looked after.
Yes, sir. Good night.
You have his name?
Yes.
Now, gentlemen, it's not by accident, as you may have thought, that you four are here tonight. You, Tench, Sterling, Varnum, Lafayette, you know what's in my mind. The reports before us show we've neither food nor clothes nor arms for the maintenance of an army, nor defense if we're attacked. I've written to Congress and I have their reply. They're sending two commissioners to investigate.
Sir, I'm a soldier and I take orders.
God help you, sir, to find some way to command, though we feed on dust and carrion.
General Washington, this country'd come to you with open arms if you said to them once for all, I'll take just this and that, and I'll take it now when it's needed. One word, one breath from you, and you'd blow this Congress that's causing all our troubles from here to Maine.
It happens that our Congress is the heart of what we fight for, good or bad, Mr. Tent.
General Washington.
Yes, Lafayette.
May I begin by saying something you know, but may have forgotten. This world you have cut from a wilderness is a new world. Brighter with sun in summer, colder with winter cold than the world I knew. I find no man but looks you in the eye and says his thought in your teeth and means it. This was not known before in the world. Europe has 30 kings and 100 million slaves. Now the name of Washington is magical in France. You will have the help of France before the end of spring. Oh, you cannot wait. I know it. Not possible. Yet, if you knew what dreams and faith rest on you, you would do this impossible.
What's on hand, Mr. Tench?
We might scratch up by equalizing 3 or 4 days' provision.
3 days. As for our high purpose, we have it still. But the men are mortal and die around us so fast, the heaviest work's to bury the dead. If you heard of a martyr, Washington, across the seas, I fear I'll disappoint you. I'd rather live and have my fun and my time before my face hardens into a mountain crag. But we have 3 days, and the order's given. All commanders meet here at 5 a.m.
All right, General. Right,
oh, Lafayette.
Yes, sir?
Stay a moment.
Yes, sir.
I was short with you when you meant to praise me. I hope to be forgiven. This war is a democratic war, and one man's name...
I know, sir. Sometimes I feel I'm a difficult guest.
If I'd said what I'd meant, I'd have told you that I expect you to uphold my hands if I ever should falter. Oh, I'm not humble. I stand well in my own opinion. But a man begins to lose his teeth and fears his eyes go bad at 45 and wishes... Oh, well, that's all trash. Let it go with the rest. You fall across our night at Valley Forge like a young star, all flame. Let's hope you're destined to avoid our quenching.
Sir, the sun's quenched in the ocean, but it rises in the morning. I gauge my life, it will be so with you.
Rafe!
Yes, sir, General Washington. Coming right out, sir.
The commissioners from the Congress are arriving this morning.
Yes, sir. They'll be wanting a bite to eat after their journey, sir.
Yes, and give us the stuff that was left from the Fusiliers' dinner.
Oh, I guess that stuff was worse than you know, General. The cookie couldn't pass that off on the cat.
I know. I tasted it. We'll have it this morning.
Just as you say, General.
I've stabled the horses, sir, and have 2 congressmen left over. If you can suggest any disposition of them...
We're giving them breakfast here. But I warn you to eat sparingly. Heat the mess, Rafe, but heat it just enough to bring out its qualities.
Yes, sir. I'll do just that, sir.
Shall I fetch them in? They're scraping their boots outside.
Well, that argues a certain amount of respect. Yes, fetch them in by all means.
Come in, gentlemen.
Ah, gentlemen. It's long indeed since I've exchanged views with members of the Congress. Welcome to Valley Forge.
What roads? We arrived somewhat bedraggled, sir.
But nonetheless, welcome for that. This is Colonel Tench, my aide, who'll hear our discussion.
General, we've been abroad since 7. Demi, I'm starved.
Well, if you'll excuse a light collation, army fare...
Surely, bring on your light collation, sir.
That infernal host at the inn. We asked the man for collops, and he sent us bacon. Bacon sickens me. I have a tetchy stomach traveling.
Then it may be that our soldier fodder won't do.
Oh, yes, it will. I'm not so tetchy by now.
Well, then we'll be served in a moment. Now, while we're waiting, I'd like to bring up the question of a new quartermaster. It's plain an army can't run without a quartermaster. And yet you've left me so these 3 months.
We know it. We know it. It's most unfortunate. But there's been some quarrel in Congress over appointments. I've done my best to settle the matter, but...
It's not settled yet.
The Lord knows, sir, when, if ever, it'll be settled.
We authorized you to live off the country, General Washington.
I think you'll find there's not much food within our range. And besides, if you turn men loose to ravage and steal...
Steal? Ravage and steal?
Well, what else can you call it? No, gentlemen, better give up at once than sow the country with footpads.
Now, a little discipline's all that's needed.
Discipline? Will you show me a rule for holding an army together on air?
Well, I've held together all morning on little more. And I see our breakfast approaching.
A welcome diversion, General.
Here you are, gents.
Yeah.
Go ahead, gentlemen. Don't stand on ceremony.
Right you are. Mind if I go right ahead?
Not at all.
Good Lord. Good heavens.
What's the matter, Mr. Fulton?
Help. Help. I'm strangling.
Get him some water, Rafe.
Yes, sir.
Have you tried this offal? In the name of heaven, General.
Are you ill, Congressman?
Well, look at your food. It crawls.
Oh, you exaggerate, Congressman.
This is better than what I've been having lately. Not bad at all. It moves about a trifle. A weevil's hard to kill.
What is it?
Mostly beans, I'd guess.
Colonel Tench, please, please stop eating it.
Take the plates out, Rafe.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. This is the mess we've dealt to several corps lately, for lack of better.
Is that any reason for ladling hogwash to us?
You're not compelled to eat it, but the men are, and you sent it.
Well, that is bad. I'll admit that. But give us something else to clear the air.
After we've settled the question of a quartermaster for my army.
General Washington, what the army needs, apparently, is not so much a new quartermaster as a new commander-in-chief. A man with the proper respect for the Congress. If you'll unstable our horses, Colonel Tench, I think we can make it to York by nightfall. Good day, General.
Good day, gentlemen.
General Washington.
Yes, Lafayette.
There's an intelligence from Philadelphia.
Huh? Tell me what's in it.
It's from General Howe, sir. He begs you to meet and talk with him under a flag of truce. He bids you come armed with no terms save total surrender or reinstatement of the colonies under the crown. It seems that Congress has refused my country's offer to form a military alliance with the United States.
We've been betrayed, Lafayette. Betrayed by our own people.
But it may only be a trick of some sort.
No. And even if it were, I should come to terms with the enemy now.
General Washington,
Where is the meeting to take place?
On an island in the Susquehanna. Hay Island. This is where they guard the food of the horses. We'd plan to take it today.
We won't be needing it now, Lafayette. This nation's spending its last heart's blood for a package of liberty. We opened the package today, and it was empty.
You are listening to a new radio adaptation of Maxwell Anderson's great epic play, Valley Forge, starring Lionel Barrymore on the Cavalcade of America and sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. As our play continues, a band of Continental soldiers is foraging for food in enemy territory on Hay Island.
Marty, it's me, Marty. Let me in.
They dumped another load while you were gone. Enough hay and grain to feed us and the horses. We can figure a way to get it all off this island.
If only there was nobody on guard at the landing.
Maybe they thought we were all dead. Say, somebody did take a shot at you. You're bleeding.
It's a scratch. This is the kind of war, as soon as you get a pair of britches, they shoot them out from under you.
Hey, what's that? Did you hear that?
Yeah, they ought to be across by this time.
Listen, that's not even a musket. That's a long tom. I told them they'd run into something if they stayed past daylight.
This is the place. The only barn in miles.
Shh. Someone outside.
I don't understand this firing to the south.
Take hold of your musket, Marty.
Right.
Lift the bolt. Stand behind the door.
The door. Somebody in there?
Step into the light where I can see you.
Easy there, easy. Who are you?
Where are they? Oh, I beg your pardon, Colonel Tench. General Lafayette.
You're wearing enemy colors on your legs, man.
I got an enemy bullet through them, too.
So I see. I hope I'm not going to find it necessary to make you both prisoners.
For what?
For desertion.
We came over here to lift a mess of corn for breakfast. We found more than we figured on.
Are there others? You're expecting others?
Sure we are. Whitey, you look so glum about it.
This island is in a state of truce, man. General Washington meets with Howe here within the hour.
To sue for peace?
This is officers' intelligence, men.
Listen, Colonel. Truce or no truce, our comrades are catching it down there now.
They are, Colonel. The truce must be off.
General Washington should be here by now. He's coming here today to meet with General Howe. But if you've got a fight going, we'll look in on it. How do we get there?
Follow the shoreline south. Keep your eyes open for sharpshooters.
How far is it?
Maybe a furlong to the cribs.
Where are you dumping this stuff?
Clopton's granary.
Good enough. You with me, General Lafayette?
But of course.
Wait a minute. You say the generals are coming here?
Yes.
What are we going to do?
Lie where you are and let them step over you. Only don't shoot them when they come in. That's all I ask of you.
Is this the place?
It's where they pointed out, sir.
I thought Tench had preceded us.
He was here, General, but he stepped out to mix in a shindy.
Sir, it seems to me there's something familiar and yet remarkably strange about this place. I've seen these faces before.
Yes, sir. In the bunkhouse at Valley Forge.
This boy, I remember him especially.
Neil's my name, sir. I came to your quarters.
Ah, yes, yes, I remember. Well, you look as though you'd got your action, lad. Look, men, I have a meeting here under a truce with the enemy. It would be most embarrassing to have them find me in the company of my own renegade.
We understand, sir. Alcock and me will help get the others hid in the granary till you've done.
But this boy, Neil, General Washington, we move him, I'm afraid it'll finish him. Badly wounded, sir.
He is. Well, let him stay if he must. Keep an eye on him, Sterling.
I will, sir.
We carry a flank, friend. Ours is a peaceful errand.
That's them now. Hurry.
Come in. Come in. Poor shelter, but it'll do for our purpose. General Washington?
General Howe. I'll be brief in apologizing. Some lawless spirits from my own army had descended on this island for their own purposes. The men are still about, but will keep the truce now.
Well, you've had the best of this day's work. Those rascals of yours robbed the corn cribs, I'm told. However, sick transit horse feed Monday. Does it meet with your wish that we transact our business before witnesses?
Sir, I'd a little rather this discussion were known to my officers.
Right, sir, right. And so would I.
First, let it be understood that I bind myself to nothing by this meeting, nor have I altered in my loyalty to the cause I captain.
To tell the truth, and it's no secret, we're sick and sore about this war at home, and would to God it had never started. And we want you back on your own terms.
My own terms would mean that we never went back at all. But I'm not alone in these decisions. We have a government and plenty, and that government are sore and sick as your own.
Now, God forbid this, General. Must we take back a king?
Damn you, Sterling. You think it's easy for me?
They said it was rain on the roof.
Who's that?
A dying soldier, General. Forgive us.
But it was a heartbeat.
Lie quiet, lad.
I'm sorry. I think I'm dying. But if I die, you will share my legacy. All men will live free in a free land. All men. And there will be no more tyrants.
Don't try to talk anymore, lad. Try to sleep.
Sleep? Yes.
Sorry to be late, General Washington.
Tench! What happened?
I shall report it in due time, sir. General Howe, in regard to certain corn, which this squad of the 1st Virginia sacked last night, let me report it stowed on Clopton's Landing.
I've said goodbye to my corn, not without regret.
As to the losses in this action, General Washington, there have been some wounded and some killed. How many, I don't know. But among the latter, Nick Teague and Lucifer Tench.
You list yourself among the slain. This is rather tasteless joking.
I'm dead enough. My boots are full of blood.
Sit down, man, before you fall.
To die for hay and grain. There's a high death for a swashing soldier. The devil damn your kings and congresses and their hay.
Tench.
Take your hand from me. I'll walk to where I lie. A dog dies best in a corner. Bring on your burlap and the sailor's needle and sew me into sleep.
I'm tired and...
Tench, man. Tench.
He's done for, sir.
Sir William, it may be that you'd prefer to wait elsewhere until we're free again.
Thank you. I'm not unmoved at any brave man's passing. But his griefs are private, and we'll take a turn outside.
Come, gentlemen.
General Washington! General Washington!
Tench.
He's gone. We're all as good as dead, Lafayette.
Have you pledged yourself to Howe?
Not yet. Not yet. Dead for hay and grain, he said.
Sir, they've had news of the landing. Congress has signed the French alliance.
Too late. Too late.
Couldn't you gather your troops? Make one final effort, sir.
Gather my troops. Gabriel's trumpet might rally that veil of bones. Bring me these specters with the wind-fed entrails and the mouths that open and speak not, gaping in their misery. What could I offer them to follow me? Call them in! Call them in to me! Come in! Come in and hear me! You were some of the best, you renegades there in the granary. There was a time when you had shoes and powder for your guns and fought to rule yourselves. Now I offer you wounds and death, cold and disease and hunger. Winters to come, such as this you have, with our bloody trail in the snow and no end to it till you shovel each other in with those at Valley Forge. If you can find within yourselves the courage and the heart to face rewards like this, to fight through snow, the winter, and the heat of summer, and the valleys and the plains, to the last mountain peak, that we can still call free, our own America, if this is what you want, then close in and take your places in my ranks.
You take us back, sir?
Take you back.
I'll go with
you. Come on, you fellas. You heard what he said.
And so will I.
We'll go with you.
Well. You mean you'll take us? Then.
We thought it was over. We thought it was falling to pieces. But if you meant what you said about being plowed under before we stop, I'm for being plowed under.
Good heavens, what's going on here? Has my hay barn been turned into an American barracks now?
Sorry, General Howe. Men, you'd better go back to camp now.
Right, sir.
Will you do one thing for me, sir?
Name it.
I want to shake your hand. That'll be something to tell the boys.
Would I keep my hand from my friends? My heart goes with it to every man among you.
Thank you, sir. Now, mind you tell him.
Well, George Washington?
Sir William, I'm servant to those men in rags of homespun. This war's not mine to end, but theirs.
Your choice of counselor, sir, is your own, of course. However, you'll draw this tragedy out further.
As far as we must.
But you've lost. Lost now. Your government's opposed. Your men in draglets. The dregs of what swept up to eat.
By all the rules of the game, we're beaten and should surrender. But the spirit of the earth moves over the earth like flame and finds fresh home when the old's burned out. It stands over this, my country, in this dark year, and stands like a pillar of fire.
They'll press you harder when I'm replaced.
Sir, we engage to stand it.
Very well. I'll get a drubbing at home. Well, goodbye, sir.
We wish you good morning and a fair voyage, Sir William. So, we're left with some years of revolution on our hands.
We have food for 3 days, sir.
And then for 3 more, if we can find it. And 3 more, if we can find it. And now I think we will.
General, what should we do about Tench and the others?
We must bury them here. They've earned the ground. We'll fire a volley over them.
No, sir. We'll need our powder. And dead men don't hear volleys.
So be it, then. This liberty will look easy by and by when no one dies to get it.
thank you, Lionel Barrymore, for a moving performance of a deeply moving American play. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Valley Forge by Maxwell Anderson. In a few moments, we shall hear again from our star, Mr. Barrymore. But first, Gayne Whitman has a story for and of today.
Now, as never before, we can be grateful for synthetic fibers like rayon and nylon. Fibers developed in the chemist's laboratory. When fabrics of rayon yarn were introduced some 30 years ago, they had a good many faults. Women's stockings made of rayon bagged at the knees. A man who sent a pair of rayon pajamas to the laundry often got them back with one leg long enough for a stovepipe and the other about right for a pair of shorts. Year after year, however, behind the scenes, manufacturers labored to improve rayon with the persistence that characterizes American business. DuPont had a part in that improvement. In 1925, rayon appeared as a satisfactory woven dress fabric. In 1926 came Baronet satin. In 1928, a chemist discovered that titanium dioxide could take the sheen out of rayon and make it even duller than silk. And today, as everybody knows, synthetic fibers have made tremendous strides and won general acceptance. Americans used 580 million pounds of rayon in 1941, 4.5 pounds for every man, woman, and child in the United States. What synthetic yarns have accomplished for us is really almost beyond comprehension. Rayon means more, much more than pretty clothes. Than automobile tires that wear longer now when we must make every tire wear longer. Nylon means more, much more than long-wearing stockings. Think of the broader importance of man-made fibers. A century ago, according to the best estimate, the total population of the world was 1 billion souls. Today, it's something over 2 billion. A 100% increase in 100 years. And still, where only a woman of wealth could afford a handsome dress in the old days, and even wealthy women tried to make a dress do for 2 or 3 seasons, today, not hundreds, not thousands, but millions and tens of millions of women wear beautiful clothes. Think for a moment of silk alone. We used to buy 50 million pounds of silk a year. Most of it came from Japan. In 1920, silk cost us $20 a pound. In that same year, new as rayon was, rayon cost $6 a pound. Today, as increased demand has made it possible for industry to reduce costs, rayon sells for 53 cents a pound. Today, these fibers are all doing their part in the wartime economy in order that the future may truly hold better things for better living through chemistry.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the star of tonight's play, Lionel Barrymore. Mr. Barrymore, on behalf of Cavalcade, thank you for tonight's performance.
Thank you, Mr. Heaston. And I'm honored and deeply touched that Cavalcade chose me for such an exacting role at a time when this play means more than it's ever meant before to every American.
Thank you, Lionel Barrymore. As you already know, sir, next week on the Cavalcade of America, DuPont presents the great screen actor Charles Boyer in The Gentleman from Paris. It is an original play written especially for Cavalcade and based on the career of the young Frenchman who helped to light the torch of liberty in America and carried it back to his native land, where we hope it is not forever extinguished. Next week at the same time, The Gentleman from Paris, starring Charles Boyer as the young Marquis de Lafayette on the Cavalcade of America. The original musical score for tonight was composed and conducted by Robert Armbruster. On the Cavalcade of America, your Hollywood announcer is John Heaston, sending best wishes from DuPont.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Rocky Jordan, Cavalcade of America, past episodes of the Relic Radio Show, and everything else at the website, relicradio.com. Thousands of other old-time radio episodes available to listen to there for free. Thanks to your support. If you'd like to help this and all of the shows, help keep it all free, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on the donate link while you're on the website. Thank you, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Tuesday with another hour of the Relic Radio Show.